Richard Herring's objective.
It's Richard Herring's objective. And please welcome Richard Herring.
Hello and welcome to the last in the series of Richard Herring's Objective, the show in which the subject is objects that have become subjected to unfair conjecture, and the object is to interject and reject the objections, inject some perspective, eject the abject adjectives, and project a new concept trajected towards objectivity. That, in a nutshell, is the project. I'm trying to reclaim demonised items. I know it didn't make sense. Because prejudice works in both directions. And if you believe that everyone and everything should be treated equally, then that means everything. So if you see a smug man saying, "I am sexist, sexist against men," then do point out to him that that still makes him sexist. And if someone says to you, "The thing about me is I don't even see colour," then do make it clear that they could be saving themselves almost £100 a year by buying a black and white television license. As always, I'm assisted by the movie reviewer from Channel 5's Terry and Gabby show. It's TV's Emma Kennedy. Glad to see you again, Emma. End of the series.
It is, yeah. We can have a staff party afterwards.
You bring in games. A month ago, if you'd seen someone walking around the street dressed in a hoodie with a St. George's flag draped around their shoulders and a Hitler moustache on their upper lip, you'd have run for your life. But now you will run up to them and hug them and kiss their faces, recognising them as a fellow fan of the output of Radio 4. Thanks to me, there is now only a 90% chance that you'll be pounded into a fine dust. That, my friends, is progress. So let's see what object we're going to be objective about this week.
Dolly the sheep.
Before the 5th of July 1996, it would have been hard to contemplate any situation in which an animal as docile and unthreatening as a sheep could create moral panic and terror. But Dolly was different from the other sheep because she was exactly the same as another sheep. Imagine a world where all sheep are exactly the same and you couldn't tell them apart. That kind of thing could give you sleepless nights. Until you attempted to count how many sheep there were, then... The problem's its own solution, isn't it? But Dolly represents much more. Our concerns about our own individuality, the battle between rationalism and religion, and the general distrust of scientific progress. When the news broke in February 1997 that some scientists in Scotland had cloned a sheep using nuclear transfer, which makes it sound much more science fiction than it actually is, the press report seemed a little unbalanced, both in terms of impartiality and also mentally speaking. The New York Times said...
Fiction becomes true. Dreaded possibilities are raised.
Dreaded possibilities? What were these dreaded possibilities? Perhaps someone might make a cardigan from Dolly's wool. A cardigan of pure evil. Another headline read...
Cloning discovery has unleashed a wolf in sheep's clothing.
No, it hasn't. It's unleashed a sheep in sheep's clothing. That's kind of the point. Do you understand what cloning is, journalist? Another journalist, keeping a level head, claimed...
Golly, Dolly, it's the abolition of man.
Yeah, that's right. The fact that scientists can clone a sheep is bound to make us think that one day men won't be needed for reproduction at all. But even without cloning, are we facing a future where men will exist only to donate sperm, where women will keep us chained up in dungeons and milk us like aphids? Like most men, I bloody well hope so. Come on, scientists, pull your finger out. We haven't got all day. Come on, oh, brave new world that has such dungeons in it. Whilst Dr. Lee Silver, a biologist at Princeton, said of cloning...
What it means is that all of science fiction is true.
That is a logical conclusion there from a doctor. Because they cloned a sheep, all science fiction is true. So 50 feet women will soon be attacking our cities. The Clangers live on a moon full of soup. And Jar Jar Binks is real. Most terrifying of all. Though presumably if he does exist, he would very quickly be kicked to death. Even Reuters said...
British sheep clone raises the spectre of Frankenstein.
Really, Reuters? Is that objective journalism? Is Dolly the sheep similar to Frankenstein in any way? This is it! Just a flick of a switch and I will have created the terrifying monstrosity. The world will shake with fear!
Are you sure you should do this, Master?
Silence, Igor! I shall not be stopped! It lives! It lives!
A sheep? You've made a sheep?
No, Igor, not just a sheep. A sheep that is an exact copy of another sheep.
Right, and that's frightening. Why?
I have created a sheep. I am the modern Prometheus.
You're the modern little Bo Peepius. People have been waiting for years to see what you, Dr. Frankenstein, would do next after making the terrifying monster with the bolt through its neck. And all you've come up with is a sheep.
Don't you see the implications? I've made a sheep from another sheep.
Now, stop the thunder and lightning. That's not worth thunder and lightning. All sheep are made from other sheep. This is just a sheep.
Still a little bit scary.
No, it isn't, unless the sheep can, like, leap up at you and bite out your throat with monstrous adamantine teeth.
No, it can eat some grass. And it stands around looking at stuff, which can sometimes be slightly unnerving.
It's rubbish.
You shut up! This is what people will remember me for.
Well, couldn't you at least make a sheep that had the body of one sheep and the head of a shrew? You know, maybe a bolt through its neck.
That wouldn't be as scary as a sheep. Honestly, it's going to get to people eventually. You'll see.
Now, no one is going to fear a sheep. Shut up.
I'm going to bed, Igor. You stay here and guard the sheep from angry villagers brandishing flaming torches.
No one's going to care. Bloody sheep. I'll be laughed out the crippled henchman union when they hear about this. Stop looking at me. Stop looking at me. Oh, you're really freaking me out. Let me out of here. No!
It's strange that most journalists seem to compare the cloning story to Frankenstein, which is actually about the reanimation of dead material, yet weirdly hardly any journalist compared it to the light-hearted Michael Keaton vehicle, Multiplicity. Which is at least on the same subject. No one worried we might get into a situation where Michael Keaton would clone himself so he could get all his chores done and then confuse his wife, and after a series of largely unamusing incidents, ultimately, his clones would set up a pizza restaurant. Sorry if I've spoiled Multiplicity for you there. Though I would argue all the people who made Multiplicity have already done that for you. But is there really anything to fear about cloning anyway? There seems to be very few practical applications for the technique. I spoke to Professor John Brookfield, Professor of Evolutionary Genetics. John explained how I might clone him.
The idea of a clone is that everyone who's ever lived is different in their genes, their DNA is different. But the exception to that, of course, is identical twins. So yeah. Identical twins have exactly the same DNA because a fertilized egg is formed, which then splits into two, so you get two people. Now, that happens naturally, but what people have been interested in for a while is whether it's possible to do that in an artificial way, you get humans to create a clone, as it were.
So would John like to clone a human being?
I mean, I'm absolutely opposed to human cloning. I think it would create a very, very complicated moral situation about the rights of the individual who's been created by cloning. I think it would be a very difficult situation to put someone in, to have that sort of backstory, as it were.
Is there any point in cloning animals?
One of the things people talk about, which I think is probably a mistake in non-human cloning, is the idea of cloning a much-loved pet, you know. So the cat gets run over, and then you try and make a cat exactly the same as it. Now, the problem is, of course, it wouldn't have anything like the same personality because identical twin people don't have the same personalities as each other. And obviously there are complicated ideas there to do with individuality, probably ideas which I don't find as complicated as many other people do. In other words, if you were to clone me, would it be me? And the answer is, of course it's not me. Yeah. If I have an identical twin, that's not me. If I had an accident and died, people wouldn't say, well, that's no big deal because he's still around in his identical twin. They'd be separate individuals.
So it's clear, it's the possibility of cloning people that most people are afraid of. They think if we do that, we'd have crossed some kind of sacred line, destroying something holy and meddling in something beautiful and mystical, which rather ignores the prosaic and somewhat scattergun and disgusting way most of us are created. If only the sexual act itself could be as regulated as scientific experiments are, we'd stop a lot of idiots recklessly creating life with no concern for the progeny. You'd think if God thought so highly of the process, he might have put some kind of lock on our genitalia that could only be undone by good intentions. People are worried about cloning Hitler. That's a big worry as well. Boys from Brazil, we could clone Hitler, he would come back. But if we cloned Hitler, it wouldn't be the same person who came back, and it's unlikely he would start World War III. Even if he was exactly the same person, Hitler, and he came back, I think people might be a bit wary of him this time. They might remember what he did the last time. Possibly he wouldn't get voted in. You can create fantasy situations of terrible misuses of cloning, as I discovered when I talked to Professor Brookfield.
If you could clone yourself as a younger version of yourself, you could transfer your brain into the younger version of you and then live forever.
But it wouldn't be you anymore.
Well, it would if you took your brain out of your head and put it in the young you.
Well, it would be an old brain.
Yeah, but you'd have a young body.
Well, yeah, but it would be an old brain. Brains age too, you know.
Okay.
That's that plan scuppered. But I think, you know, maybe there are dangerous aspects of cloning, and if I had the technology to clone people, then I think I would be tempted to sneak into the dressing room of the actress who plays Amy Pond in Doctor Who, steal some hairs from her hairbrush, and then clone two or three copies of her just to keep for my own personal use, and, you know, have my own Amy Pond lesbian sex slaves. But the problem with that idea is that I'm only interested in 23-year-old lesbian Amy Ponds. I'm not a pervert. And a clone is not a 3D photocopy. In reality, it would take a long time and a lot of effort to carry out my dastardly plan. First, there would be a couple of years of this. Be quiet, Amy Pond. Go back to sleep. I'm trying to feed Amy Pond. Then I have to change Amy Pond's nappy. Shut up! After another 10 years of massive expense and upheaval to my life, I'd get 5 or 6 years of teenage tantrums. Turn that down, Amy Pond. I'm trying to write series 14 of Richard Herring's Objective.
Why? They only ever broadcast one series.
You shut up! Radio 4 might change their minds and bring it back now. Turn that music down.
Okay.
Oh. And you, Amy Pond, you're not going out dressed like that.
Shut up, you're not my real dad.
No, but I stole the hair from the real Amy Pond, and I paid for the expensive cloning process, so technically you're mine. And Amy Pond, are you going to sit there all day long looking miserable?
Leave me alone, I never asked to be cloned.
Oh, you know, some days I wish I'd never cloned any of you. After 20 years of putting up with that, I'd be 63 years old and just be desperate to have all those Amy Ponds out from under my feet so I could enjoy my retirement in peace. It'd be a lot easier than doing that to just go out and try and get a real girlfriend. Anyway, I talked to science writer and Christmas cake enthusiast Ben Goldacre. He loves Christmas cake. That's something you probably don't know about him. It was October, he offered me some. I thought it was odd. But anyway, he surprisingly disapproved of my Amy Pond plan.
It also says something very bad about you that you want to keep a clone of Amy Pond, doesn't it?
Well, what's to stop a scientist doing that? What's to stop the man who cloned Dolly the sheep going, next I'm going to clone Amy Pond and not tell anyone about it?
I think still what you're kind of saying is, you know, people could use technology to do bad stuff. But I don't think people doing bad stuff is a particularly new phenomenon. It depends on how you're using it, a piece of technology. So, you know, you could use a switch to build a landmine, or you could use it to sort of switch on a children's bouncy castle, which is, of course, an infinitely more beneficent use of technology.
Or you could make a bouncy castle with a landmine inside it. Combine the two. Scientists are usually portrayed in fiction as evil genii, whilst in reality, scientific advancement in terms of medicine, transport and day-to-day luxuries have largely, though not exclusively, improved the world. So why do all science fiction films have these experiments that go so darly wrong with awful consequences? Goldacre thinks there's been a change in the portrayal of science.
I think it's only recently that mainstream coverage of science and medicine has become quite sort of fear-mongery. In the 50s and 60s, science coverage in mainstream popular culture was actually generally really positive. You know, it was the white heat of technology, we're going to the moon, it's all going to be fantastic. In the 50s, all of the technological artefacts that you came into contact with in your day-to-day life, you know, radio, your car, you could probably understand exactly how it worked. Whereas now, I think modern technology is sufficiently advanced that it's difficult for people to understand it. So it becomes kind of unseen and hidden and sinister and threatening.
He loves Christmas cake. He keeps it in his freezer. He does. I asked him if he personally knew any evil scientists.
Well, actually, I do know evil scientists. I mean, not personally, but I've covered a lot of stories of bad behaviour, for example, by the pharmaceutical industry, where some really bad things have been done, some terrible judgments have been made, and people have died unnecessarily on some occasions on a kind of biblical scale. Things like that tend not to get covered in mainstream media. What you instead get are these slightly sort of theatrical, almost sort of poetic stories about evil scientists that don't really capture the true content of the evil that is done. And I think that's partly because the evil that is done by, for example, big pharmaceutical corporations on occasion is a little bit complicated and difficult to explain.
He had marzipan all over his chin while he was... But maybe our fears can be explained in more mundane terms.
I think a lot of the time when people talk about anxieties about technology, what they're really talking about is anxiety about change in their own personal environment that make them nervous. They're talking about people who are younger than them, who seem to be better than them at their job and understand the cultural world around them much better, and who are much better at interacting with technology that's obviously really useful. And when you see that happening, as I'm sure we both will when we're 60 or 70, I bet we look back and go, little shits, I hope it rots your brain and gives you cancer.
I'm planning to die before I get to 50, so I win. So, anyway, the movies are lying to you. Scientists aren't maniacs bent on world domination and being evil. I put Professor John Brookfield to the test. His expertise is in fruit flies.
So if you just devoted your life to breeding fruit flies, do you think you could ever get to the point where you'd create a species of fruit flies that would worship you as a god?
Probably not, on balance. No, I don't want to give you the wrong impression of what scientists are actually like. I'm always tempted on an open day to sort of say something like, it's Escape from the Basement again when all the people are there. But there are no such monsters, and nor do we want there to be.
Scientists aren't as they're portrayed on screen. As we can see there, they're not these power-crazed lunatics trying to play God. They're generally some slightly specky men with a nerdy sense of humour, or geeky women stuck in laboratories all day, too socially inadequate to even get a girlfriend or boyfriend. Do you know how Dolly the Sheep got that name from scientists? She was named in honour of country and Western legend Dolly Parton, because the sheep was cloned from part of a mammary gland. And, of course, Dolly Parton has mammary glands. Along with every mammal on Earth, male and female. But that's the kind of crazy, wild sense of humour that the scientists have. And with that, you can be pretty sure that the only mammary glands those guys are ever going to get their hands on in real life are on a sheep. But if you're going for the breast pun, scientists, you could at least have named Dolly the sheep instead of... You could have called her Barbara Windsor, couldn't you? That would... I just made that up on the top of my head. Still better than Dolly Parton. Scientists, please consult a comedian before coming up with joke names. I don't try and make my own nuclear reactor without your help. So don't you... I'll do the jokes, you do the cloning of sheep and the immoral experiments. John Brookfield actually met Dolly the Sheep, though. I asked him about his impressions of this superstar sheep.
I went to see someone at Roslin Institute where she was located, and I was a bit early, and so they said, oh, you've got half an hour, come and meet Dolly. And so they took me along and said, here's Dolly. And of course, it's just a sheep, isn't it? They could have shown me any sheep.
They could have done. Are you sure they actually cloned it rather than just going, that's, look, there's, we've done it?
Well, they actually did quite a lot of very specific genetic testing to show that it was exactly the same as the source of the nucleus, which was used in the transplantation. But when I saw it, you know, they could have shown me any sheep, and now it's stuffed.
But I know I feel sorry for. I feel a bit sorry for the sheep that Dolly was cloned from, who doesn't get any attention, yet it was her who had these genes first, and Dolly just exactly copied her. It's awful when the exact copy ends up being more successful than the original. I know, because that's what happened with me and Stuart Lee. Still, people do seem fearful that science has got to a point where it's overstepping boundaries into the realm of God and religion. Let's have a look at some of the typical hysterical objections to progress. This is objection one.
Cloning's not natural. It's not natural to have two genetically identical individuals.
Well, that's just nonsense, of course. It's perfectly natural. If a gardener takes a cutting from a shrub or a flower and replants it, they've created a genetically identical clone. Does that make Alan Titchmarsh the new Dr. Mengele? Don't answer that. And of course, as we've already heard, twins are genetically identical individuals and no one is unduly scared of them.
One word for you, Richard. Jedward. Not natural.
Fair enough. They're a bit weird, twins, you have to say, and Jedward especially so. But aside from what they may or may not get up to behind closed doors, they are not unnatural. And if you think everything man does have to be natural, what about wearing clothes? It's not natural. What about planting crops? That's not natural, so we shouldn't... animal species have been artificially bred by selective breeding over the last 10,000 years. To give you an example of that, every domestic dog you will see is from the same one pack of wolves from 10 to 15,000 years ago, from a St. Bernard to a Shih Tzu. They're all the same. So they're dogs, not natural.
No, they're not natural.
They're not natural. Are people picketing dog breeders or trying to stop crufts happening? It's just hysterical. Hysterical objection too.
The scientists are playing God. Man shouldn't be able to play God.
But similarly, how do we define what playing God is? Are we playing God by taking an aspirin? Did God want us to have that headache and we're... Are we playing God by having a blood transfusion? I might easily counter that it's God's job to judge mankind and its actions. It's up to God to judge whether someone is playing God, because God is our judge. So, from my perspective, if a human is prepared to judge that someone else is playing God, then they themselves are playing God. Hysterical objection three.
There are some things mankind is just not meant to know.
The problem is, how do we know which things mankind... is meant to know and which things mankind is just not meant to know?
Well, it's obvious what they are. I mean, that they are the things that mankind is just not meant to know.
But there are some things that it's good for man to know, I'm sure you do. Like the fact that fire is hot, that water quenches thirst, and that unsolicited emails claiming that they can increase the length of certain body parts are part of a sophisticated con. It took me a while to find that one out. But where's the cut-off point of what we should know and what we shouldn't?
Well, there are just some things that mankind's not meant to know.
So what you're saying is that God has chosen some things that we are just not meant to know, right? But how does he let us know which things these are? That's it, Gabriel. I've done it. I've finished the list of things that mankind is just not meant to know.
Yes, yes, very, very good, O Lord. They are just some things that mankind is not meant to know. So it's good we have a list of what those things are.
Yes. So now I suppose I just have to show mankind this list of things that they're just not meant to know and they will know not to know them.
Yes, good plan, God, except that if you show mankind the list of things that they just aren't meant to know, then they will know the things that they just aren't meant to know because they will have read them on a list.
Yes, good point. Save me some embarrassment there. In that case, why don't I not show them the list of things that they just aren't meant to know? Then they won't know them.
Yes, yes, that's good. Except if you don't show them the list of things they just aren't meant to know, how will they know which things they are meant to know?
Yes, a bit of a catch-22 situation, isn't it? I suppose if I gave them a list of all the things that they are meant to know...
Well, that would mean that they immediately knew everything without having to find it out for themselves. Cavemen would have Lamborghinis and Hollyoaks. It would be chaos.
Mama.
Well, I mean, I'm not trying to tell you your job, but... you're God, you know. Wouldn't it be easiest to sort of magic it so that mankind can never find out about the things that they just shouldn't know? You know, keep them secret.
Yeah, right. So with cloning, for example, which is one of the things that mankind is just not meant to know, I could create a little folder on my desktop like this. Call it something really dull, like boring accountancy stuff, put them off the scent, and then password protect it.
Mm, great, great. Then they will only know the things that they are meant to know. What password are you going to use?
That's the clever bit. I'm going to make my password... password. It's easy for me to remember. No one will think of that, will they?
Yes, yes, good. You are right about that.
I know I am. I'm infallible.
But this is so important, so why don't we have another password after that one? You know, something tricky to guess. Mm. Like a date that's important to you.
Oh, okay, good idea. I know. I'll go for my boy Jesus's birthday. No, no one will get that. 2512. Brilliant. The secrets of cloning are safe. If there is a God, then he made us to be inquisitive. He knew when he told Adam and Eve about the apple that they would eat it, because he made them so they would. But he still got angry about it. That is entrapment at best. And extreme mental illness at worst. The problem is that God didn't mention any of his concerns in the Ten Commandments, his only direct correspondence with us, as he was more concerned about ox coveting than genetic modification, it would seem. We are kind of worried about the fact that scientists are going to try and destroy the world, but if anyone is going to destroy the world, it's you, the public. Look at your reaction to global warming. You don't do anything about it. You blame science. But there's loads of things you could do. For example, everyone is leaving their TVs on standbys, right? It creates a lot of power unnecessary, a lot of pollution. If everyone just turned their TV sets off manually, that could actually help to save the world. But of course, that would mean getting up out of your sofa, walking 3 or 4 paces across the room, bending over and actually pressing a button with your finger like in Victorian times. You can understand why people aren't doing that. That's too much to ask, isn't it, to save the world. I mean, it almost sounds sarcastic when I say it like that, doesn't it? But that's not the full story, because next time you want to turn on the TV, you know, got to get up out of the sofa, it's another 3 or 4 paces, another bend, another press. You can understand why people aren't doing that. It's too much to ask to save the world. In 50 years' time, the world will be underwater because of this. Your kids, your grandkids will be living in the sea. They'll be going, why? Why is this happening? Why are we living underwater? I don't like it. It's so wet. I'm non-aquatic. Why my toys are floating away? I'm crying, but you can't see. Why did it happen? Why? Well, it's partly because at the beginning of the 21st century, everyone left their TVs on standby, created a lot of pollution. That was one of the major causes. They can't have known what would happen if they did that. No, they did know. It's just, think of it from their point of view, 16 paces, 2 bends, 2 get-ups, 2 sit-downs. I mean, it is asking a lot. With an attitude like that, our only hope is that science will come up with some kind of solution to this problem. They could be our salvation. We could, of course, pray very hard to God to keep the temperature down. Good luck with that one. If you have religious belief, that is fine. That is a good system to try and solve this. I have quite a nice view of world religion. I actually believe that all religions have got it right. When they say that all the other religions are wrong. If we left everything to nature, you know, most of us would have died in childhood. The rest of us would be lucky to live to 40. Science has got us to this point where we can live longer lives and more productive and happy lives. People can use science for evil, of course they can. But the truth is, most of what they've done is for good. The science behind Dolly the sheep could lead to the control and eradication of diseases like diabetes. By genetically modifying farm animals, we might be able to make proteins that can treat all kinds of human diseases, actually save the lives of little children. And if we put animal genes into plants, we might be able to come up with a bush that can actually grow sausages on it. I mean, that we should let science do its job. We shouldn't be afraid of Dolly the sheep. Thank you very much. Good night.
You've been listening to Richard Herring's Objective, written by and starring Richard Herring, with me, TV's Emma Kennedy. The producer is Talusha Galani.